Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, your headquarters for building a six-figure plus e-commerce business. I'm your host, e-commerce entrepreneur, and Jeff Bezos wannabe, Andrew Derry. Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. Today on the podcast, I'm going to be bringing you your monthly dose of news and e-commerce event roundup. And as is the tradition here, joined by Current Events aficionado, Mr. Drew Sanaki. Drew, welcome.
Good to be here, Andrew. How have you been?
I'm good. Thanks, man. I noticed there was some stirring, the dust getting blown off the blog over at drewsanaki.com this last couple
weeks.
Yeah,
we're dusting it off. Got a couple posts back up there talking a lot about customer lifetime value. I'm trying to create a new concept, customer value optimization. I'm trying to brand that term. I don't know if it's going to work, but...
You're trying to like introduce a term and when people
see if it catches on.
Very cool. Is that when you've made it? I've thought about that. I thought, man, have you really made it until you've introduced the lean startup, right? Eric Ries, he's got that next to his name. And lifestyle design is Tim Ferriss. That's when you've made it, right? When you've got some kind of tech e-commerce nomenclature that is attributed just to you.
I think so. I mean, full disclaimer, there's another guy out there who's using the term, this guy, Ryan Dice, who is a great information marketer. But we're using it to talk about two different things.
But he stole it from you, right?
I don't know. There's also a book called Customer Value Optimization, and I don't know who came first. And maybe it's the guy who wrote the book.
Very cool.
But he also talks about a third thing. So we basically need to decide what we're going to call it.
DrewSanaki.com, a really good couple articles. So if you've missed those the last couple weeks, check them out. And excited to give into the news for this last month because a lot of really cool stuff. But quickly, of course, got to do a first sale shout out. And this one's going out to Ryan Weech from VHDDrones.com. And Ryan says, after a few months of research, business filings, working with suppliers, and website development, our site went live this week and we had our first sale yesterday. It's a part-time gig for us at the moment, but we're really hoping to build it into something great. Thanks for the inspiration and knowledge to go out and make our idea a reality. Ryan, awesome, man. It's so cool. Really interesting concept. Obviously, drones have been picking up all over the place. I live close to Yellowstone and people have been, in surprising numbers, crashing them into famous geysers. And so I don't know if that's a pain point your customers have.
It's something I'd try to do.
It is, man. Yeah, I mean, these people are going...
plug up Old Faithful.
Yes.
Just take a drone right into it.
You know, sitting on the porch there, if you've ever been Old Faithful, flying your drone and getting great aerial shots of... I don't know, people fly them over and then they get hosed by the geysers and they crash in. But they're getting fined thousands of dollars. It's serious stuff. So...
Wow.
Anyway, Ryan, congrats, man. And keep us posted. Hope things continue to go well. So let's go ahead and get into the news from the last month. And I got to say, I don't know about you, Drew, but I think the biggest news I saw coming out, man, Alibaba, the biggest IPO in history, rolls around. It's a $25 million roughly IPO. I think the proceeds to the company were $25 billion.
$25 billion
with
a
B. $25 billion IPO. They got about $8 billion. What are your thoughts on that?
And it's big. I mean that the few articles I read about it were just what are they going to do with all the cash now? They could buy eBay. That's what's kind of crazy, right? They could buy eBay. They could buy Etsy. You could buy any number of the sites that we already think of as the big boys on the block.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, what are they going to do with all that cash?
It's interesting. And Alibaba is one of those things where, I mean, I think most people know Alibaba as, hey, it's a site where you can go and get products. It's a B2B site that you can go and source products for your business. And that's definitely what they do and probably most well-known for in the United States. But there's so much more to the company than that. That's such a small fraction of Alibaba, and they do so many more things. And actually, in an episode in coming weeks, we're going to be really doing a deep dive into all the different parts of Alibaba because the well goes deep. They have so many different business lines.
Such as,
stay tuned and we'll get into those. No, a huge cliffhanger.
Reading my show notes.
You didn't prep me for this, Andrew. Kind of a quick little preview of what's to come. They have a site like eBay that's really customer to customer. They have a site like Amazon that's, and these are all focused on the Chinese market.
That's from what I understand, that's, I don't know what percentage of their business, but the bulk of it's over there.
85% plus.
Yeah. The guy, Ma, the CEO, talks about how China is the feast, is the main meal, and the U.S. is going to be the dessert.
Yeah, it's interesting. And one of the cool things about them, too, is unlike Amazon, they're very focused, and their branding and their messaging and their mission is very focused around empowering and helping small businesses, where Amazon, I think, a lot of times can be seen as gobbling those up. Their mission is very much to help that. And so I think a lot of times people looking at, you know, places they could buy, eBay makes a lot of sense. Etsy especially makes a lot of sense, maybe because it's in line with their branding and messaging. So really interesting. It'll be cool to see how they end up, you know, coming into the market, because obviously the U.S. market, rather, because they got the cash to, and they've said they're going to. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, you look at Rakuten was the last big e-commerce player to come out of Asia. And, you know, they bought buy.com maybe, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 years ago. I don't think that acquisition went well. They were also saying the same thing, like, hey, small businesses, we're on your side against Amazon. We're going to empower you and help you tell your story. And I just think they didn't. Or maybe they haven't executed on that vision, or haven't been able to execute on that vision. But I'll be curious to see what Alibaba does.
Yeah, it's interesting. I heard another potential buyout rumor, BestBuy.com, them buying Best Buy. I don't know.
Best Buy, Sears. There have been a number that have been thrown around.
Yeah, but I mean, how would they... Best Buy sounds like a terrible place to buy. They have nothing, you know. Yeah. Would you want to buy Best Buy? I mean, that's like taking all the wonderful momentum Alibaba has and just going, right. Maybe not. Maybe there's some huge value add they can get there and, I don't know, streamline their supply straight from China. Do you see Best Buy in any way plugging into what they're doing well?
I don't know much about what their operations are in China. Like, why would they want a brick and mortar footprint in the U.S.? Maybe they would know what to do with it better than Best Buy did. But no, I think the other ones you mentioned, eBay and Etsy, seem like much more logical fits.
So stay tuned again. Hopefully the next episode, or at least in the minimum the coming month, we'll have a deep dive on Alibaba. Another big thing to come out this last month, of course, the iPhone 6 rolls out. And that in and of itself is kind of exciting. But more specifically to our focus on the e-commerce world, Apple Pay debuts. And, you know, I'm sure most people have heard of it, but if you haven't, it's a way where people can really easily pay in-app, pretty much using their fingerprint, the fingerprint reader on the Apple iPhone. Makes it so much easier to pay to be able to pay for things on your phone. And, you know, exciting, the big thing I think about, Drew, that got me most excited, it's not quite here yet, but taking that to the next step where you're not just being able to authorize, hey, I want to buy a song on iTunes, or hey, I want to pay with my stored credit card at a point of sale system, but hey, I'm on, you know, an e-commerce site and I can just stick my fingerprint there and bam, it loads my address, my credit card information, authorizes it. I put one more fingerprint and I'm done, because I think that would just open the floodgates of people who purchased on mobile.
Yeah, it's super cool the way it works. I just, you know, from what I understand, the way it protects your data, like your data never goes to the merchant, which I think is great for you as a consumer, but it's sort of bad for the merchant as a marketer. Like, if they imagine all of the people listening to this podcast who have e-commerce sites, and what you do with your customer data and how you use it to market to them and send email promotions and things like that. Well, now what if somebody made a purchase and you never got anything identifiable? Like, you didn't get their name or their address or their credit card, maybe not even their email. So I think I was thinking about this more from the perspective of a brick and mortar store that would use Apple Pay. The customer can kind of come in and buy without a trace. And that's, again, good for the customer. But how is that going to impact marketing? So that should be kind of interesting to see how that unfolds.
Yeah, that is interesting. I knew that the way they have it set up, the really sensitive information, the credit card information is very secure. Is Apple just as stingy with... and obviously it's really early and it's mostly in-app use, but are they super stingy with just customer name and email information as well? Because it seems like if it was really going to be a hugely, and again, this is kind of looking ahead to hopefully when they bring this to the web browser so that you can make this work, you'd have to have at a minimum an address for shipping. And it would seem crazy for them to not at least give you a customer name and an email address. That would be, I don't know. As sexy as it is and as streamlined as it is, that would be, I mean, email is such a valuable channel for retailers. It seems like that would almost be a deal breaker.
Yeah. And I think on one hand, when I think of the brick and mortar stores, I think, wow, they're not going to be able to get any identifiable customer information. But then I think, you know what? Most of the retailers don't do anything with that information anyway. Maybe some of the bigger ones do, but yeah. I mean, if you're looking at, if you're the Gap or if you're J. Crew or something, you do a lot of transactional analysis and you figure out which customers buy from which stores, and they often correlate the credit card data from your brick and mortar store with your website. So you can tell like who's a multi-channel shopper and who isn't, and are the multis more valuable than the people who use one channel. So that does a lot for them, but I don't know how it'll unfold after Apple Pay if most of those consumers are all using Apple Pay.
Another big big thing in the news. I don't think this one maybe hit the headlines as prominently. I didn't see it as much, but Facebook unveiled an advertising platform they're dubbing Atlas. And it's an advertising platform that spans across channels. So traditionally, you've only been able to advertise with Facebook's data and targeting on the Facebook.com platform. And they're opening that up with partnerships with tons of different sites. So just like Google's content or ad network, you can use all the targeting in Facebook to be able to target Facebook users with ads, but show those ads on a bunch of third-party sites, outside of Facebook, which really extends the reach. So pretty cool, and it'll be interesting to see if Google does anything to address this, because next to Google, Facebook's the next biggest one in terms of customers, I would guess, and their targeting is probably so much more refined than Google would be.
Yeah, it's really interesting what Facebook's doing, that you can take that same great contextual targeting that exists within Facebook, and now you can do it anywhere. So I think the one place where that doesn't play is in the Google search results, right? Where mm-hmm. most of what you're targeting there are queries. And with queries, you can get at things like customer intent. But everywhere else, everywhere else where you're talking about just the context of the site and of the user, not really of their, what they're querying for, but just sort of like who they are, what they're doing. It really opens it up and maybe even tips things in Facebook's favor, because I always liked their contextual targeting options better than Google's.
Yeah. Have you seen, you've got a lot of experience, running the ad agency mineral.io. Do you have a lot of clients where they get Facebook campaigns set up and they're really profitable, they're doing really well, but you run out where you get to the point where your audience, you're maxing out your audience, really, the people that fit that criteria? Because if that's the case, I imagine being able to, if that's a real problem for Facebook or for people marketing on Facebook, being able to open up the number of people you can market to on a daily or weekly, monthly basis by the fact there's so much more real estate online that you can show those ads at, seems like it'd be a really big benefit for advertisers.
Yeah. I think it would be a great benefit. There's a saying in advertising that if you're not making money off your ads, you're not targeting it enough. And oftentimes that means you're getting so targeted that, your pool of potential buyers is really small and you're not getting a lot of sales out of it. But something like this will really open up that audience.
Very cool. One thing, I'm doing a little experiment, quick little Facebook aside, doing an experiment at the moment where I went through all my pages in Google Analytics and sorted them by dollar per page view. So what, for people that may not be familiar with that metric, Google Analytics will give you a dollar per page view, which pretty much means for every page view, like what's the if somebody views this page on average, how much in revenue does that produce for your company? And so we went through there and picked like the top 10 pages for dollar per revenue. And we're targeting just people, retargeting people that just visited those pages. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I'll report back on that in the future.
So, cool. So you're using Facebook retargeting for that?
Yes. Yep. Just Facebook retargeting.
Nice.
Another one that kind of went under the radar, but I think is interesting to talk about. Another IPO, much smaller in this case, but Wayfair is posed to go public in the near future. And Wayfair is kind of a company, I'm sure I know you know about them, Drew. They're a home furnishing company. They got about $1 billion in sales, or they had about $1 billion in sales in 2013. They're growing like 50% per year, valued at about $2 billion based on IPO share price. But what's interesting about them is they're a dropshipping company in the home goods market, and they're still not profitable, even after they're being so enormous. They lost $15 million last year, but yet they have this, I don't know, it's interesting. I'd love to hear your take, Drew, because it's the space that you are in with Design Public. It's obviously, they're really just they're a dropshipping company that is enormous.
Yeah, when they were CSN stores, they were sort of the most advanced dropshipper out there. Well, they're bootstrapped startup, just like we were.
Yep.
Where the name of the game is getting as many different SKUs under one site as you can. They initially had 200 or 300 different sites under CSN stores, and they realized that, hey, customers are only buying once from any of our stores. We have no brand equity. This is not a company that would scale or go public. I mean, it gets big and it throws off some cash, but we're not, you know, it's so much work to acquire these customers. How do we increase our retention? And so they rebranded as Wayfair. And then they also bought Dwell Studios, a manufacturer. So they're not 100% dropship anymore. Dwell Studio, I think they could take that design team and help build out their own proprietary product in the home category, because Dwell Studios, like, great brand, has broad appeal to their designs. So I think that's kind of what they're thinking and where they're going. But yeah, in the early days, we were fighting All Modern sort of tooth and nails, and those guys were good. They were like the Borg. I think we called them the Borg, just because we'd go to trade shows. Sina and I would try to sign vendors at the ICFF, and you'd look two aisles over, and All Modern or CSN at the time would have like 10 MBAs just walking the aisle and going booth to booth, signing everybody. Like, they didn't care what the product was, what it looked like, but if you would drop ship it, they wanted to sell it. So they were a force to be reckoned with. But to your other point, that, yeah, they're not profitable. And it's really interesting to see. There were a number of CSNs out there. There was one called Mercantilla, which was out of the Bay Area. They had venture funding, probably had 50 or so stores.
Sorry to interrupt, Drew. Is a CSN a consumer shopping network? Is that what that stands for?
I don't know if it stood for anything. It was what Wayfair was before Wayfair was Wayfair. They were CSN stores. So it was like 300 different stores. All of them were focused on one niche, like all ergonomicchairs.com, all barstools.com, all modern.com.
Oh, it's just a brand. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a brand. It's not an industry acronym. It was their actual brand name.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes, that was who they were before they became Wayfair. And so they rebranded as Wayfair maybe 2 years ago. It really dinged their SEO for about a year, but they've come out of it on the other end. And I think, you know, that's the story. But there were a number of those massive dropship retailers around, none of whom were profitable. I mean, we kept it small and stayed profitable, but the other ones went out of business, and Wayfair kind of stuck around. They raised a lot of money, and now they're poised to go public.
You know, obviously there's a lot of different variables here, and you can't necessarily make a conclusive case for this. I mean, they could pretend maybe they're taking all their money like Amazon and pouring it into growth. I don't know. But on the surface, I think it's a little bit telling that you've got a company that their core model historically, and for the most part right now, is dropshipping. They've got $1 billion in sales. They're some of the best in the industry, as you said, in terms of scale and efficiencies and you know, potentially talent, and they're still losing money. That kind of speaks a little bit scarily, even though that's not the proper way to say that, to the future of dropshipping. So
it'll be funny to see if they go public and they're all high fiving on the first day, and then Alibaba just buys them like later that day. It's just like the, well, I guess they'd still be high fiving.
Yeah, they would. That's not going to be a bad
it's
thing.
Like,
either
we're
way,
public. Ah, we just got bought.
Be an exciting week for them. So diving into some of the top threads from the e-commerce fuel private forum this month, at the top of the list, a great thread on the risks of migrating to a new shopping cart. I mean, we're actually in the process of doing a big site redesign migration right now, and a lot of other people chimed in. It's a really scary thing. There were some horror stories shared. There were some people who say, hey, it's not that big of a deal. But it is a big deal. Even if you do everything right, you know, you got to have your stuff together when you do it. And Drew, I know you. This is something, of course, that you know from firsthand experience.
Yeah, disastrous experience. I feel like I know tech, and I'm a hack developer, and it's like I got this. Like, I can handle this. But it's still, we migrated from a homegrown shopping cart to Magento, and it took my site down for several months. Our SEO just went in the tank because the site wasn't loading. We couldn't revert to the old one. Like, I think I might have done everything wrong. But so I just, nothing against Magento. I'm sure it had more to do with the fact that I was doing it. But yeah, get help. That would be my, or just be careful. You know, it's not, I write all about marketing on my blog, but still the most popular post on my, one of the most popular posts on my blog is one that goes through my Magento migration experience.
Oh man, it's crazy. I think it's, I've fortunately gone through a couple entire migrations and managed to come out unscathed. But I think if you're a really detail oriented person and you're on a mature cart, you're moving to a mature platform. I know that was one of the issues that you had, Drew. And and you're willing to sweat the details. You can definitely do it in house. But yeah. you got to make sure all those things are in order, because if you mess stuff up on your 301s, which is your redirects, you can really botch things. So another interesting topic that came up was this idea of how e-commerce companies reconcile supplier invoices and expenses. So there's kind of this idea of, if I send an order to my dropshipper, he sends it out. In my accounting software, how do you match up the costs from your supplier from that one order? Because things change. Especially if you're doing a decent amount of volume, it gets complex. And personally, myself and a lot of other people just say, it's not worth the hassle to match up every single order. And personally, like, we've historically done it on an aggregate basis. So we'll say, what were all of the charges from our supplier in April? What were all of our revenues? Like, okay, does our gross profit look roughly in line with what it's going to be? Okay, we're going to just assume that's right, because is it worth diving in and spending 20 hours per month trying to figure that out to save $300? So, but Drew, I'd be curious to hear your experience, because people had opinions on both. A lot of people said they got hosed by suppliers like on a weekly basis.
Yeah, happened all the time. I mean, we were drop shipping from probably 400 different suppliers. And I don't know if it wasn't intentional hosing, but they always had to be reconciled. Or more common was the supplier that just all of a sudden would increase their prices and say, oh, that table you just sold? Yeah, now that's $500 table, not a $400 table. And you're like, well, thanks. Thanks for the heads up. Like, you're supposed to tell us this before we sell the table. But, they would go ahead and just invoice us for the higher amount. And we had a bookkeeper who initially, her job almost full time was to do that reconciliation. And we'd push back with the suppliers. And ultimately, we built software to deal with it. Software that my business partner, Sina, has now gone on to productize and roll out. It's called duoplane.com.
It looks really good, by the way. If you're doing drop shipping, I've been looking at it and drooling. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it's a premium solution. It does everything. And I think it does this. It's sort of like you can set those rules to get away from Sina, to get back to me. And
enough talk about it with someone else. Let's get back to me.
I don't want to sound like I'm plugging his software. I just want to talk about what it did for us. So the system basically would, if a vendor tried to, you could set rules. So, okay, my vendors or my suppliers can't change the prices, or if they change it, it has to be approved by me before we can sell any more product or something like that. So you could put those rules in there, and it helped manage the process. But before that, yeah, nightmare, and it was a bookkeeper full time who was sitting there just going line by line, reconciling things.
Well, it's crazy, because the scale that I'm at right now, it just doesn't make sense. Like, even assuming, man, I really hope my suppliers aren't listening to this, but even assuming my suppliers overbill me by like 500, let's say $300-$500 every month, mm-hmm. unless I have a very automated system in place, which is possible to do and I'd probably need to do, it's probably not worth the time to go through line by line and everything and measure it up, unless, maybe it is worth the time, but it's debatable. So it's
right.
It's tough. Another interesting thread that really took off was, does a customer's attitude dictate how you treat them? And there were some really interesting stories that merchants were sharing about just people that would call up irate, pissed off at the world about some minor thing. And it's funny, you would think, if you were looking at this from a very non-emotional, logical standpoint, you would think, oh, it's an angry customer. I should go out of my way to make them feel better. But almost without exception, people were much less likely to help the people that called up and just went crazy and railed on them. And the people who called up and said, oh, I'm sorry, I really hate to apologize, but your customer service rep broke in and ate a sandwich in my fridge, like did something atrocious, but were kind about it, they got, of course, all of the attention. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was probably my experience too. What's the expression? You catch more flies with honey than with vinegar.
Yeah.
If you're a customer, be nice.
Be nice to those people on the other side of the phone. So one last thing I want to do, Drew, I kind of get in the habit of, I thought this would be kind of fun, is to do at least one story every month, completely non sequitur related to e-commerce, but that is interesting and inspiring. And if we can tie it back, all the better. But I just want to chat really briefly about Derek Jeter's last game and his career with the Yankees. And given that you're a New Yorker, of course, defer to you. Want to let you kind of have the first go at any thoughts on that?
I'm a New Yorker, but I'm a diehard Boston Red Sox fan, so I'm glad to see him go.
Did not do my diligence on this one.
Yeah,
note to Andrew.
I'm from Boston, so... but no, even when he went up, you know, his last game in Fenway, he had a standing ovation, sort of like when we being Celtics fans, said goodbye to Magic Johnson, same kind of thing. So
kind of a respect thing. Yeah,
you got to respect it. I mean, he's just like, New York was crazy over this guy. And over the last couple of weeks, that's all you read about because the Yankees aren't making the playoffs. So it's just Jeter, just 24/7. Jeter's last at bat, his last game, you know, and his last game was incredible. The guy had like two or three RBIs and you know, knocked in the winning run. And it was just, it was awesome. I mean, he's so beloved by this city.
Yeah. And for all of you non-sports fans who are about ready to turn off the podcast here, the reason why I thought this was so interesting was, you know, there was a commentary by one of Bob Costas, I think, and Bob Costas, the famous Major League Baseball announcer. And I think he summed it up really well in terms of like why Derek Jeter has been such a celebrated player. And he's obviously been an exceptional player. He's been fantastic in terms of clutch positions when he really had to come through in the clutch. He's been phenomenal at that, but he's by no means been like the major league's best player or even the best player of like the last, you know, couple of years or last 10 years. But I think what really endears people to him is that he's not only is he a great player, but he's consistent. And he's got integrity and he's got a lot of class in terms of, you know, when you hear about so many top-notch athletes behaving like buffoons or having, you know, just terrible personal issues splashed all over the tabloids. Like, he's been at it for what, is it 20 years, something like that? And
yeah.
To my knowledge, maybe I'm missing something, you know, but he's managed to carry himself with a lot of poise without, in the public spotlight, without having anything come to light, which I think the combination of his character and his you know, just his talent is really cool. So I just saw the value of consistency, integrity, and class there. Whether you're in business or whether you're in baseball, I thought that was cool.
Total professional. You know, you read about all the tabloids here, zero in on A-Rod and like whoever A-Rod's dating and what kind of dumb thing he said. And Jeter, like, you never hear that stuff. You never know anything about his life off the baseball field.
Exactly. So Mr. Jeter, if you're listening, welcome you to come on the show. We'd love to talk about your career. We're very e-commerce focused.
E-commerce fan.
But I know he's huge in the if you know, we're e-commerce focused, but I think we can make an exception for it. So great. So again, and we're going to link up to all of these discussions that are in the private forum from this post page. And so you can check out and dive into all those if you are a forum member. So great. Well, that's it. We'll be back next month to tell you all the exciting news, craziness, stories, and the scandals in Mr. Sanaki's life since we can't get anything from Jeter. So that's going to do it for this week. But if you're interested in launching your own e-commerce store, download my free 55-page ebook on niche selection and getting started. And if you're a bit more experienced, look into the E-Commerce Fuel private forum. It's a vetted community for store owners with at least 4,000 in monthly sales or industry professionals with at least a year or more experience in the e-commerce space. You can learn more about both the ebook and the forum at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.